I'd like to call the meeting to order. We have five bills on the committee agenda today, members, and we're going to move through them fairly quickly as we're rounding up our bill here and getting prepared for the omnibus bill and the markup on Friday. So the first bill we have before us is Representative Hawes.
Representative Hawes,
welcome to the committee, and if you'd like to present your bill. And let's see, we don't have a quorum yet, so we'll wait to move it. But you can go ahead and describe your bill.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. I also have an amendment that should have been handed out, and you do not have a quorum, correct?
Right, but why don't you describe that amendment would put the bill in the order that you prefer?
That it does, and this amendment is now pretty much housekeeping to the bill, and it'll also make it match the Senate side.
Okay.
Would you like me to speak towards the bill?
Please.
The bill originated as an agency bill that they asked me to carry, and normally agency bills are pretty clean and would move through the system pretty well. And a year ago when they were working on this, they had all consensus, but then late in the hour, people started to read it, and they found a sentence in that bill that they didn't like, and they didn't like a whole bunch.
Okay.
So we kind of turned into a Rocky movie there in one of the meetings, and we went the distance of the meeting. But I said, I think I know how to solve this, and I had an amendment in my mind, and I told people of the amendment, but I said, I don't want to do the amendment on the fly. I want to give it to the professionals to do a wordsmith. The incidence of this was the fact that we were calling for a change here, that the executive director did not have to be a veteran. And that made all the approval, but when they started thinking about it, they thought, why should that have to be? And I said, well, there's a way of doing this that secures both the status and the professional and the quality of that position and the veterans. And it was a process that civil service has used for a few years, is that they pull people in from civil service that are working there that meet standards. And if you have three people that meet that standard, in this case three veterans and your national search that meet that standard, you pick from those three veterans. If you do not, then you can open it up to the outside and allow non-veterans in to apply for the position and be considered as one of the top three. We now have gone from a Rocky movie back to a group hug, which makes me very, very happy. And it's moving on the Senate side, and so I would be asking that you allow this to go to the floor, and with everybody in agreement, I would like it to even go to the consent agenda. Let me tell you a little bit what the bill does very quickly. It used to be that the chairperson of the veteran home did not have to be a veteran. Now that person does have to be a veteran. The executive director will probably be a veteran, but goes through a process that under some circumstances for the quality of that service and meeting of those standards may not end up to be a veteran. It changes from on the board, where it used to be five members of the board used to have to come from the healthcare professionals. That has changed to at least five members. So they could have five or could have more within that nine. I have the vice chair of the board today, a Mr. Williams, Dan Williams, who would also like to speak on this bill.
Mr. Williams, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Good morning, committee. And I enjoy group hugs, so my words will be very brief. The board does agree with the bill and with the amendment. And certainly our thanks to Representative Hawes for carrying this. It is in the same language as the Senate, and it will allow us to have the absolute best person in that executive director position, preferably a veteran. That's where we will look first, and that will continue to be the objective. We're also appreciative that this opportunity was taken to do some tweaks regarding the chair of the board having to be a veteran, and also the ex officio members, that status is cleaned up. So I've learned that the best thing to do is to be quiet when things are going along well. So, Madam Chair, committee, I would entertain any questions that you may or may not have.
Questions for Mr. Williams? No? If not, Mr. Hoslip, if you have a bill that meets the favor of this committee, we'll see in a moment here. And my understanding is that you would like to have this bill moved to the floor.
Yeah, and possibly even the consent. It has no controversy left with it.
We don't quite have a quorum in order to add your amendment, so I think what we might do is go on to the next bill and just ask you to wait for a few minutes. It seems like there's no...
Would you like me to wait?
If you could wait for a few minutes, and as
I
soon
sure
as...
I'm paid by the hour.
We just need one more of our members to be here, and then we'll be able to take your bill right back up. So.
Research.
That's correct.
Oh.
Then moving right along, members, we have the next up on the agenda is House File 2100. Representative Clark, would you care to move your own bill?
Mr. Chairman.
And where are we moving it to?
This would be laid over for possible inclusion in our bill.
Okay. When you're ready, let us know about your bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, House File 2100 deals with the phthalates that and bisphenol A compounds that are found in some of the products that are used in children. And what this bill basically asks us to do is have the health department take a look at these issues, come back with some recommendations for us to figure out what to do. Some other states are also looking at these issues, and we have discovered that exposure to the kind of products that we're talking about here can cause certain problems in people, including especially perinatal exposure can cause problems that are considered endocrine disruptors and can impact these young people later on in their lives. And so what we're trying to do with this bill is actually make sure that we can have a study done. This came to me a couple of years ago, actually. As a nurse, I was at one of the meetings of the the National Nurses Association in Minneapolis, and there was a lot of discussion there about the fact that we have in some of our hospitals, for example, we have the products that are used to deliver IV fluids contain plastic that has within them the plasticizers that are indicated in this bill, the phthalates that leach into the fluids and then are then passed into the bodies of particularly of concern of those very tiny little ones who may be in perinatal units and so on. What we need to do is understand more about these issues. And so what the bill does, as I mentioned earlier, is we are going to have a committee that's put together and to review the scientific literature and make recommendations to us next year. I'd be glad to answer any questions. There's a couple of articles that I think were passed out that come from a couple of organizations. One is the Nurses Association. One is it's called the American Nurse. One is from the Environmental Working Group. Another one is a letter from an environmental consultant who I've worked up with on some of these issues. Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to try to answer any questions that people have. Let me just say that in Minnesota, we're at an early stage of understanding these problems, and I think doing this study is probably the best way we can handle it.
Questions, members? Representative Eastland.
I came in late, so if you already talked about this, Representative Clark, you can just tell me you're sorry I was late.
That's okay.
Did you talk about kind of the broader picture about, I mean, this stuff is being used in more than just Minnesota, and kind of what's happening in kind of the larger venue of places and maybe other countries and whatever else this might
represent? Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Stevenson. There have been other states who've been looking at this issue. I know California has been looking at it.
And one of the important things, I think, is for us as a state to get good scientific data, look at what the alternatives are, and that's one of the issues that this study group will be charged with doing. We know that, for example, with some of the products used in hospitals, there are alternatives. We know that with some of the baby products, there are alternatives. And we just want our parents to be able to know. We want our hospitals to be able to know. And California is the one state I know that has considered it. I'm not sure that there are any others that have actually passed the legislation.
Any other questions, members? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the committee, I'm looking at the seven committee members. And I know from personal experience, the University of Minnesota has one of the most foremost research departments in the world on plastics. And basically, the name is Dr. McCosko. And it would seem to me that if they were not participating in this research, you would be missing an incredible resource. Mm-hmm. These are all health providers, but the topic you're into is chemical research, specifically in the areas of plastics. And without that kind of resource participating in this, you're not going to get the results you want, and it may even prejudice it in a way.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark?
Short of putting Dr. McCaskill's name in there, I think they're actually on line 1.14. We talk about one representative environmental health sciences research. We want to make sure we have a researcher. And we also, on the last line of that 1.18, other representatives of other health sciences. I don't have a problem with putting the University of Minnesota, in there. But I had hoped that we would actually be able to cover it with those two phrases. If you think you'd rather be more comfortable with putting representative of the University of Minnesota Health Sciences Research, that's fine with me.
I think I would, okay. Only because I know of him.
Sure.
Whether he'd do it or not, I don't know.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Clark.
With that, I think I actually can move the bill, and then I can move an amendment. We have a quorum now, correct?
Yes, we do.
So I'd like to move House File 2100 be laid over for consideration in our omnibus bill. And Representative Peterson, how about if on line 1.14, we could either put it there or we could put it on 1.18. Do you have a preference?
No, I defer to your suggestion.
All right, well, let's put it on line 1.18, the very last bit. One shall be a representative of the University of Minnesota's, what do you want to call them?
Chemical Plastics Department.
Chemical Plastics Research Department. That's fine. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to incorporate that into my...
Okay, I hear the oil amendment. I'm wondering if staff, if somebody can decode what was just done so that we all are clear as a committee here. Or maybe we can just work together on rephrasing it again. I'm not sure if we have it. Do we feel like we have it here?
Yeah.
Somebody read it back to me just so I know what we're doing.
One shall be representative of and cross out other health scientists and put in the University of Minnesota Chemical Plastics Department.
Is that accurate?
Research Department, right.
Anybody else with questions to that amendment? Okay, all those in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Now, I believe that bill, any other questions to the entire bill, because I think the motion before us is to lay this over, but I do have one other person with a question, Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, after the work that we've done related to the water quality issues in South Washington County, we have had to find a funding source for that research that's being done related to that. Do you have a fiscal note attached to this, or do you have a funding source, or do you have a sense of how much this will cost?
Thank you,
Representative Clark. Call on myself. Representative Clark. Friday's getting close, right?
Yes, I do have a fiscal note that combines this study with the next bill study. They're both asking the University of Minnesota to look at this, and I believe it's about $100,000 for the two studies together, maybe a little bit more. And we have, we do feel we have that capacity in our committee.
Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion on this, folks? All right, then we will make that motion. It will be laid over for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. And then we're going to go back. I don't know how much of chemical education Representative Hawes would like to get. I'm sure he's probably excited to stay. But we will, folks, moving back to 1891, which we heard earlier, we do have now a quorum, and we'll take care of some of this information here. Representative Hawes, for those of you that came in, Representative Hawes had an amendment to his House File 1891. And Representative Hawes, how about we get like the short version again of just kind of bringing people up to speed so we can get this out of here?
On the amendment, the amendment that is presented today is pretty much a house cleaning, an amendment that makes it match the Senate bill. And it's moving very well in the Senate bill. Previous to this time, there was some controversy on the bill because of late readings by the VFWs, and that was because the executive director wouldn't have to be a veteran. We changed that to a process that would select on a national search that the top three qualified people would be on the list. If they're all veterans, they choose from that. If not, they can move non-veterans in. Everybody's happy with that. This bill, by its very nature, makes the chairperson of the veterans' home will now be a veteran. The executive director has the potential of not being a veteran, but most likely will be, and changes the five health people on their board from five to at least five. That's as fast as I can go.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Any questions to either the amendment or the bill? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Right.
Mr. Chair. It's not Chair, I know who I am.
Mr. Chair.
We have a lot of personalities here today.
I think we should go and start over.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hawes, the reason for putting a person that's not a veteran on the board is what?
Representative Hawes.
A couple of the specific reasons, and Mr. Wilson will come down, sometimes people are coming from these committees that might be servicing on the committee, and maybe a chair of that committee would come in as a non-veteran. I'm a non-veteran, and if I was serving on the chair, and I would love to go over as a board member, and I would not like to be outlawed. There's a difference between hiring in an employment practice and an actual board serving. And so some of those board members, the health condition, the health background is a pretty serious background, as serious as the veteran background. Mr. Williams.
Mr. Williams, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, committee members, the executive director, that's the latitude, Representative, I think you're looking at, of not being a veteran now. And if you are aware, we've been without a permanent executive director since mid-August last year. And we found that while we had a national search and our pool of veterans have been very limited, we want to get the absolute best person for the position. And this provides the latitude for us to do that. We are very committed to wanting to get a veteran in there. There were two constraints that we've run up against since we started the national search. The first has been the veteran preference, which limited the pool, and then the second, the salary in Minnesota. And so while we will have the opportunity to have a non-veteran, we're absolutely committed to try and get a veteran first.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Williams, my concern is that we now start down a slippery slope here of allowing those individuals who, yeah, they may have interest in the policy or interest in the issue, but now all of a sudden they get into this position and then find that we can't find other people to serve in positions within the Veterans Administration, Veterans Board or in a situation like this. That we now say, well, we're going to expand this to the whole board doesn't have to be veterans, and we end up with persons who are interested, and all of a sudden their agendas start creeping into, and it starts watering down the total mission statement of what the veterans the board is all about. And my concern is for the Veterans Home Board and all that, and we start bringing in other outside interests that diminish the total intent focus of where we're going. So that's a concern of mine, and I just want to let that be known on tape that we don't deviate. In fact, I'd even like to say that a person that's a non-veteran is an ex-officio member rather than an actual voting member or having any direct say in the whole process of the thing. But I'll let it go at this point. I'm just concerned that we start diminishing the focus of what the Veterans is all about, the Veterans Board and the Home Board.
Thank you, Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I've got some strong feelings on this, and unfortunately I would have rather not seen it got watered down as much. And Mr. Chair, Mr. Williams, if I could clarify, are you a veteran, and when did you serve, and in what branch?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Williams.
Chair, Representative McNamara. Yes, I am a veteran, and for the other veterans in the room, I like to tell people I was in the real military, the Navy.
you just hit a home run with Representative Anderson.
Yeah. I served 1971 through 74. While I am a Vietnam Air veteran, I did not see combat. Did do service at a war college, Armed Forces Staff College, TAD for a short period at Strategic Air Command, Patrick Air Force Base, and Submarine Tracking Station over the Bahamas. So very committed. If I may just add, currently, and this may address Representative Anderson's concern as well, currently every board member is a veteran. And so we appreciate there. This bill addresses a number of things, and so understand that we're talking about the board of directors, which currently are everyone's a veteran, and we're actually strengthening that only a veteran going forward when this passes can serve as the chair of the board. The other piece is the executive director of the agency. And currently there is a restraint that person must be a veteran, and we will do everything within our power to make sure that we have a veteran in that position. As a last resort, then we will open it up to non-veterans.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
If I could have a follow-up, and then I'll that I wanted to get the background because I appreciate, I knew you were a veteran, Mr. Williams, and I appreciate your service on the home board, and so I wanted to make sure that folks knew your strong connection, veteran background. And then I wanted to let the other members that may not know, Mr. Cox, who's the acting director for the entire Vets Home Board, is not a veteran. He is still, I believe, the administrator of our Hastings facility. Would that be true, even though he's the acting administrator for the Vets Home Board? Has done a fantastic job in Hastings, and I think it's a travesty that we have a system set up that here's a guy that can take and fix some of our problems, and we've created a system that says he can't be there. We will not consider him. And so I often tell my children, two wrongs don't make a right, and I think this is a case of where. And Representative Haas, I appreciate. I've worked with the Veterans Service Organizations. They do a great job. They carry a lot of clout. I appreciate that. They're a good organization, and I'm not surprised that they weighed in on this issue as they have. And thank you for carrying it. I've been there, done that. Good luck as we move forward.
Twitch, but I'm
good luck. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a good bill. I mean, we had it in the Veterans Committee, and we had the service organizations, and they had genuine concerns. And those concerns, I think, were addressed. They needed to voice those concerns because it's near and dear to their heart. Many times we feel like veterans are the only ones that understand what a veteran goes through, and in many cases that's correct. But we do run into individuals who have a heart to serve, even though they didn't serve in the military. Representative Haas is one of those people, you know, who has served veterans in our local community faithfully for years. And so we have those people who get into the business because they not only they like the people, but they like the mission. And so I think this makes an opportunity for those people to serve our veterans in a very fulfilling manner, taking care of them where they're the most needy. And I would hate to exclude them from that provision. And I think having the director still designated as a veteran keeps our the spirit of the intent of this thing to the core, which is really being able to relate to the veterans. So I want to thank Representative Hawes for bringing this forward and wading through all of the controversy.
All right. Wonderful testimony, members. We need to do a couple of movements. And one more question or comment, Representative Morgan?
No, I was just going to make the motion. I realize that hasn't been done yet. So.
Okay. Representative Morgan will move I think we need to move the A3 amendment first. So the A3 amendment, Representative Morgan moves the A3 amendment. Those in favor?
Representative Krantz?
Yes.
I think we have to move the bill first and decide where it's going to go. We haven't moved the bill because we didn't have a quorum.
All right. Representative Morgan moves this bill, and I believe the place you'd like it to go, Representative Hawes, is to the floor.
To the floor into the consent because everybody's loving it.
Through finance. So I think the technical direction of this is to finance and then to the floor. So is that correct or no?
No, I think we can go right to the floor now.
We got it from finance, so it has to go back to finance.
I think we got it from... I'm being told by staff that we got it through finance. It has to go back through finance to the floor.
I get paid mileage, so I'll be fine. I was paid by the hour, but now I'm just doing mileage.
So the motion before us from Representative Morgan is to pass this out of committee and send it to finance with a strong recommendation that it gets sent to the floor.
Thank you.
All those in favor?
Chair,
excuse me.
I believe there's an amendment that we need.
What's the amendment now?
And now we need to move the amendment. Boy, we're going to get this figured out here.
And I'm still not married to you.
So, to the A3 amendment, folks. I'm getting all red now. Don't take pictures now.
Cheer your complexion.
I know. Jeez.
See it from the inside.
All right. To the A3 amendment that we've talked about. Representative Morgan also moves the A3 amendment. I know he does. I can feel it in my bones.
So move.
So the A3 amendment, those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Good. Now it's in the form that the author would like it. And now for final passage and sent to finance. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Representative Hawes, you are on your way.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next on our agenda is House File 917.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'd like to move House File 917 be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, so moved. Representative Clark, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This bill basically asks the Commissioner of Health to create a committee of stakeholders that would work with, again, an environmental health research scientist and at least one parent advocate to look at the scientific literature and make recommendations on the health impact of lindane on our children and report back to us next year. And, Mr. Chairman, let me just give you a brief synopsis of the reason why this bill is before us. After, I think it was 29 years of review, the U.S. EPA withdrew registration for the pesticide lindane in agriculture, and that was in 2006. And they called it one of the most toxic, persistent, bioaccumulative pesticides ever registered. And environmental groups around the country have been asking that this product be phased out in pharmaceutical uses, which is still being allowed. So I just want to say that all uses of lindane, including pharmaceutical uses, have been banned in at least 52 countries, including most recently Mexico. And I learned from some folks who have a little opposition to this that it's still available in Canada, but it is banned in 52 countries in Mexico. And it's used in this country, it's still being used in some cases for head lice in small children. That's why it's a concern, and that's why this bill's before you. It's also used for another disease called scabies, which I'm not addressing in this bill. I'm only dealing with the impact on small children, and it's used for head lice. It has been banned in California since 2002, and one of the interesting things about that is that legislation brought forward that it was a severe... it caused significant contamination in the sewer systems there, and they found that one dose of lindane shampoo used on a child could contaminate 6 million gallons of water. And since they banned this in California in 2002, the amount that's been in their waters has just dropped dramatically.
Why am I concerned about this? This is a breakdown, is persistent, as I mentioned earlier. There's concerns about neurological impacts and children having seizures and so on. It's a very serious issue, and there are alternatives. That's the good news. The alternatives range, and I learned in the last committee fund from Representative Rood, who's a nurse as well as I am, that one of the easiest alternatives is yogurt, putting yogurt on the head. I was aware that olive oil put on the head of a child with plastic bag on can do the same thing. There are good alternatives. This is a pesticide. It on small children, the dose is a great concern. And in fact, it's dispensed now, I think, in this country. It's in limited doses. It hasn't yet been banned by the FDA, but they do have increased warnings about neurotoxic impacts of it. So I want us to study this. I'm not trying to ban it. I want us to study this, come back, and next year we'll decide what to do. And that's what the health department is willing to do.
Okay. Anybody in the audience that would like to speak either in favor or against this bill? I do have one person who would like to speak to it. If there's anybody else in the audience, please raise your hand so I can keep an eye on time. Okay. Mr. Tennyson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Robert Tennyson. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Gray Plant Moody in Minneapolis, and I represent Martin Grove Pharmaceuticals, which is the sole maker of Lindane for medicinal purposes in the country. Lindane is a prescription drug. It's been used and approved since 1951. What I'm handing out is a booklet on Lindane. If you turn to the section on regulatory history, you'll see the history of Lindane before the Federal Food and Drug Administration and others. The Lindane used for scabies, lice, and so on are a second-line treatment. If the first form of treatment doesn't work, they go to the second-line treatment. And it's important to have this treatment available because there aren't any really good treatments, and whether you put yogurt on your head or shampoo or ice cream, I don't really care. None of those are proven to be really accurate or effective. It may work sometime, may not. But I just want to point out that none of these chemicals or any medicines are fully effective. And it's important to have this available because this matters can be infectious. They can spread in a nursing home, they can spread anywhere. And when I'm addressing the issue of whether you should have a study or not, this issue has been studied and studied and studied. It's been reviewed and reviewed and reviewed. The only opposition to this that I know of is coming basically from junk science, from a group that claims to have other treatments that work, and they sell mite combs, or, you know, they talk about having combs that you can comb it out of. Studies don't show that that's effective. It's it for various reasons. But let me also point out a couple other things. You would, with this study that's proposed, you'd have one parent and some scientists. Well, the Federal Food and Drug Administration, the EPA, the Center for Disease Control, the American Pediatric Association, all of these groups have studied this issue, and they prescribed these results. This is an effective treatment in some cases. It should be kept available. And I don't see how the state could possibly bring to bear on this, a complicated question, the expertise to do anything useful. The federal government, the Congress has identified the FDA as a sole basis, a sole organization for studying the risks and benefits of every medication. They work with the various institutes of health and the Center for Disease Control to develop a standard for treatment. This medication has gone through some revisions in terms of how it's packaged. There have been extensive epidemiological studies, 34,000 people over 20 years. These questions about various health issues have all been studied. They've all been looked at through multiple studies by various people, and I don't think that you're going to be able to duplicate that in any sensible way. And to make sense out of the evaluations of this, you really need experts who know the science and know the medical treatment. And let me just point out that in rigorous head-to-head studies reported in the medical journal Lancet in 2000, the annual removal of head lice with a commercial web combing kit was found to be less than half as effective as treatment with prescription medications. In 2006, the Cochrane Systematic Review of Head Lice Treatments, that's an independent authoritative analysis of evidence-based research, states the results of the trial by Roberts in 2000, reference the previous study I mentioned, indicates that physical control methods such as combing, bug busting, are ineffective as a means of curing head lice. This type of method of intervention is very labor-intensive and requires a certain level of skill to be effective, which makes the treatment inappropriate as a primary treatment against head lice infection. The Center for Disease Control and American Academy of Pediatrics designated these medications as a preferred approach over manual removal for the treatment of head lice. Moreover, use of combs is not relevant to the treatment of scabies, which is a widespread parasitic infection. And lastly, should we know that statements against the use of Lindane shampoo in favor of knit combs must be scrutinized, as these statements have been aggressively advanced by the National Pediculosis Association, a special interest group of non-healthcare professionals that directly profit from the sale of knit combs. My point, and I would ask you not to include this in the bill, we don't have the expertise here. The science is purporting that this is a problem of junk science. It's not supported by any reputable scientists. It's like any other medication that's reviewed. There are risks. The risks have been reduced by the way in which it's now prescribed. It's limited to samples of 2 ounces. So it's one treatment and you're out. You have to go back for another prescription. These are terrible infections, infestations. You need to be able to cure them. The medical profession has used it for 50 years. In terms of the reference to the conclusion of water, about 1% of all lindane is used for medication. The rest, 99%, was agriculture. Also, the formulations for the medical use of lindane are different from pesticides. Lindane is not a pesticide, it's an insecticide, it kills insects. The formulation is different, just as it would for some of you use Decon to kill rats. You know, that same medication with a different formulation is used extensively by humans to handle blood heart problems and circulatory problems. For example, cumarin is another chemical or the medication that's made from the same stuff rat poison is made from. And so there's a different formulation that suggests that this is a pesticide. It's simply inaccurate. And with all due respect to my friend Karen Clark, I really don't think this group that's designated in this is really an appropriate group or has the facility or capability or will have the capability to even make any kind of sensible judgment out of an area that's been studied extensively. There's extensive literature, extensive research, and to have that reviewed by somebody who's a parent and say, well, my kid got rash. Yeah, well, of course you're going to get rash sometimes. But, you know, it's not an appropriate way to do it. Thank you.
Questions from members?
And if you're done with those books, I'd be happy to have them back.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tennyson, President Clark mentioned that lindane has been banned, like in California or some other states, and I'm just wondering what, from your vantage point, and I noticed in here EPA has made statements and also the FDA has made statements about the safety and use. What is the reaction to the banning of it in California? How have you dealt with that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, as I mentioned, Morton Grove is the only pharmaceutical company that makes this in the United States. They weren't even aware. They didn't have it. It's not a big company. They weren't aware of the California action until after it happened. So they didn't have any participation in that or even able to bring that to attention. With regard to the 52 other countries or states, I don't know of any others. I can tell you that in Canada, you can buy it over the counter, and it's not in a 2-ounce bottle with proper warnings on that. You get a 17-ounce bottle, and when I testified in the other committee, I brought the props, but you can order that on the internet right now. And so I don't know whether the references that Representative Clark is making to the 52 countries deals with the use as a pesticide or as a medication. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark?
Unless Representative answers another question, I actually do know the answer to that question. It's been banned for any use in those countries, and I do have a list of those countries if you want to look at them. There's 50 countries that have banned it, 30 more that have restricted it to use that would, for other specific purposes.
Other questions from members? Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In one section in this book, it says that you've put boxed warning on for careful patient selection that says, quote, Lindane lotion or shampoo should be used with caution in infants, children, the elderly, and individuals with other skin conditions, and those who weigh less than 110 pounds. I think that's all children. So on the box, you're putting the warning for careful patient selection to not use it for children. Heck, it even includes my mother. But what we're doing here is saying it should not be used for children.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Tennyson,
Representative Lane, that black box warning is on a lot of medications, and it's an advisory to the medical profession when they prescribe it. The reason it's there is because if you overdose on it, and you have to be especially careful with people that are small because their skin in relation to their body mass is much larger and they absorb it more readily. It is used for children. It's not banned for the use of children. It is an effective second line. The FDA has reviewed that. If you look at the section on regulatory history, you can see that. To take this away from doctors and substitute your judgment for prescribing of medication is not, I think, appropriate thing to do. Let me give an example. If you use Tylenol, Tylenol has side effects. It's estimated about 500 people a year die from use of Tylenol. We don't ban Tylenol because it's been analyzed that the benefits outweigh the risks. We have nothing like that in this product been on the market, and in the whole history of it, there's hardly any deaths at all associated with it. When they have been, through studies, have been cases where it's been grossly misused by the person applying it. So I don't, to take it away from the ability to get rid of lice, or in the other product, it comes in a shampoo and it calls it a lotion. The lotion is used for scabies. Scabies is a very difficult thing to deal with. You see the picture of it in there. It's an ugly. If you look under the scabies section, it can infect any part of the body. And these are mites that burrow into your skin and it causes these things. These, in the tab, literally say that, well, we're going to ban Lindane, which it still doesn't do at this time, but without going through the science that's been already expended on this by a lot of different groups and a lot of literature, there are supports there, I think would be a gross mistake.
Thank you. Follow up, Representative Lane.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify that we're not talking about scabies here. We're only talking about children and head lice.
Thank you. Representative Clark, final comment.
Well, just a final comment, Mr. Chairman. Again, this is a study. We're not banning anything here. We are asking that our health, Department of Health work with environmental health research scientists and at least one parent, and they can put as many people as they want on this committee to make some recommendations to us next year. And I do hope that we will pass this bill. I just want to point out
Since California banned this product in 2002, all the alternatives do work. They've not had any headlights disasters occur. And the other thing is that you cannot use this on your pets. It's not legal to use blending on your pets in this country. It's been banned by the EPA for that. So I hope at least we would look at whether or not we want to continue to allow it to use in our children.
Okay. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd be interested in hearing from the Department of Health whether they have the ability to weigh in on this. Are you interested in telling us a little bit?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for members' edification, just to let people know, when we adopted our Korean daughter, she was full of scabies, and we tried to find alternatives to stop her scratching, and she had sores just from scratching because it was so irritating. We finally used Valindane, and it took care of it, and she was only 6 months of age.
Director Stein, I think, do we need the question repeated, or you got it?
I think I have it, Mr. Chair, but as I wanted to hear it again from Representative Severson, if I could. My name is John Link Stein, Director for Environmental Health, Minnesota Department of Health.
Thank you. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Stein. I think in terms of, we're asking you to kind of take a look at something that I think has been looked at extensively. What kind of resources do you think you're going to need to, and any new developments that we're going to be able to turn up on this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, we do have a fiscal impact for carrying out this work. We would likely have need for research scientists to conduct literature reviews, pull together information from available sources, review and scrutinize that information, and then convene a group to review that. And there would be time and effort involved in conducting that activity. So we have identified a fiscal impact with this. It's a similar work to what we do with other substances and chemicals. A slight difference here is the involvement of a group.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Stevenson,
I think, what was the fiscal note that came on this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson, I'm not totally aware. I believe we had a fiscal impact associated with a variety of the activities that were in other bills as well. We may have combined those efforts. So, Representative Clark, that's
Chair,
the information.
Representative Clark.
Yes, Representative Stevenson, the committee does have that fiscal note, and you're welcome to look at it, and it does combine several studies that we're asking for, this one, the previous bill, and I believe another one, and I believe the total impact is like $113,000, something like that. And again, they're using similar resources at the Department of Health, bringing in research scientists and others to work with stakeholder groups. So I think it's actually, as Chairman Representative Gibson, a very good investment. We need to be up to date on this and figure out. I understand, Representative Anderson, listen, as a nurse, I handed it out to people years ago. I didn't know what I know now. A lot of us didn't know. And we're talking about bringing up-to-date science and with our expertise at the Department of Health, make sure we can let Minnesota consumers know.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
Representative Clark, to that issue, I know we talked about head lice, and there are alternative meds for that. Although I understand the second line of defense on this as well. How about for scabies? Is there another ointment or application that does equal job?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark?
Yes, there are. There's several. I know one of them is called Urex, but I'm not even addressing the issue of scabies. That's for another day. That's something that I'm not addressing in this bill. I just want to talk about the issue of head lice because it is used by hundreds of thousands of parents and others. It's being prescribed. And I think folks just don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, members, thanks for the discussion. The chair will lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Next on our agenda is House File 2148.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, well, we've been talking a lot about chemicals and stuff, and I've actually, people have come to me because of some of these issues.
Representative Clark, can we
I'd like
move
to move
this bill?
House 2148. Sorry.
For possible inclusion into the omnibus bill?
Yes, certainly for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
And I can tell you right up front, there's no fiscal note attached to this. I did talk to the Health Department about it, but let me just tell you about the origin of this bill. This bill was brought to me by some high school students in Minneapolis who are concerned about very strong fragrances in the school causing some of them problems. And a principal and a number of students from three schools in, well, actually two in Minneapolis, one in Columbia Heights and another one in Roosevelt and St. Paul, formed this little working group to talk about how these fragrances were impacting, especially the people who have chemical sensitivities or who have asthma. And so what they want to do is, again, working with the Commissioner of Health, pull together a group of students and people from the Board of Education and teachers and school administrators to try to look at potentially harmful effects of fragrance products. And I have to show you, they did a couple of things. You have in your folder a brochure that they put together. It's put together with them and the principal who's working with them. They made this display, and Mr. Chairman, members, I'd say the two students who wanted to come here today to talk about this, and they did talk before the Education Committee with their principal, and that committee did pass this bill to us, they are taking their finals today, and so they couldn't come. So instead we have their little brochure that they put together and this display. And they talk in here about trying to understand the impact of, they go beyond fragrances, they also talk about cosmetics and personal care products. But on the fragrance side, they are aware of, and apparently they've been talking in their schools, and students, other students have come to them and said, yeah, I am having problems, my asthma does get triggered when I'm here and there's a lot of perfumes around and so on. So they want to look at that, and that's where this bill came from, and I'm very pleased that the Department of Health is willing to take this group of students, work with them, their teachers, and others who would be concerned related to Minneapolis public school system, and do a pilot education project and see what they come up with. And they'll be reporting it back to us. Actually, what's missing on here, I see, is a report back to the legislature. That should have been added to subdivision 2 of the plan. I will add that as it goes into the slate over for possible inclusion. Mr. Chairman, I'll make sure that gets added.
Okay.
And what's suggested by the Education Committee that we get a report back?
Any questions from members? Representative Benson.
Just a quick comment, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I actually am one of these persons who is sensitive to these kinds of things. My wife finds a room far upstairs when she either uses hairspray or some kind of a fragrance. In the classroom, in those closed environments, I remember many times having female students opening up a bottle of fingernail polish, for example. I just about passed out a couple of times, and it's very strange. I don't think of myself as allergic to anything, but there's something about these fragrances. And I think many times when people hear about this, they think, well, this is kind of silly. You know, that can't be a very serious issue. But I'm here to testify it is. So thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you. Same comment. I just heard on CCO radio in the last few days, they were talking about this subject, and some schools were beginning to ban fragrances. And it was a very positive news report.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know this is a serious issue. We have some, my daughter had a friend in school that couldn't go to school because of the issue. It was a name, I can't remember what the name was, but it was because of the fragrances. But I guess my question is what is being done in other venues here? Do we need to reinvent kind of the wheel on all these things, or is there some way we can tap into what's happening in other areas regarding this kind of an issue? Because I think it's an important issue, and it's something that really it hasn't gotten, I think, full recognition in a lot of the medical community, but I think it's something that's worth looking at. But
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Eastman, that's what this study will come up with. And I think there are some other places where it has been banned. I'm not promoting a ban and saying let's look and see if there should be some limitations in some schools. So that your situation of describing where a student wasn't able to participate, that I've heard those stories more and more. And we're going to ask these folks to bring all that information. I don't have it all. Hopefully they will. And the health department is willing to
work with us, I think, with one of their departments that already looks at some of these kinds of issues.
Any other questions from members? All right. The motion before us is to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and that is what we will do.
Mr. Chairman, I think our last bill is also 2241.
That's correct.
That's the skeleton bill, or it's the governor's bill, really, for this committee. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that bill. We, of course, will be amending it, and I think there's a couple of amendments today. But I'd like to move the House Bill 2241 become our omnibus bill, I guess is what I'm going to say. Be laid over to become our omnibus bill.
I believe that the formal one is being laid over for possible inclusion.
Being laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And, Mr. Chairman, what it does bring the governor's proposal before us, so that we'll be able to, as we go through in the markup, so we'll be able to look at this.
Okay.
There's a couple of amendments, Mr. Chairman, that I think we've had bills come to us recently in the last few days even that we're trying to deal with, I believe.
Representative Clark, before we go to those amendments, I'd like to take a moment here to introduce the members of the American Association of Medical Transcriptionists.
Oh.
Welcome. Now to the amendments.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm not...
I believe, members, you're looking at the A1 amendment.
To the A1, and I believe, Mr. Chairman, that deals with some fees that the governor had recommended to be increased, and they were just inadvertently left out of the bill. I think that's correct. Yes. This is the governor's recommendation again.
So I think if I heard you correct, you said that this is basically... If we were to have the governor in front of us, he would like this amendment be added to his bill.
Mr. Chair, I think he'd give us an endorsement.
Thank you. That's what I just wanted to know. Just any other discussion with that, members, to get this in the shape that the author slash governor would like this in? Representative Severson.
Mr. Chair, and I'm a Republican. I guess I'd like to know from the governor's office, you know, we're hiking up fees here and some justification for hiking those fees. Is there anybody from the governor's office on this one? I suppose.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Margaret Kelly with the Department of Health. I'm not the office, but they are our proposals, and I would be happy to answer any questions about the fee increases.
Yeah, Representative Severson, I'm being told by staff that these were part of the initial Department of Health presentation.
Okay. So. And Ms. Chair, ma'am, I'm trying to, this was a presentation that was done earlier in the session here, and these were the fee increases that were addressed, and that's reflected in the appropriations for the governor's bill currently. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Houston, that's correct. This language just implements the governor's budget recommendations for the health department.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's what I needed to know.
Well, we are always happy to put you at ease. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The last page, it talks about a repealer, Article 6, Section 27. Could someone enlighten me as to what that says or what it's about? That we're repealing?
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Kelly.
Representative, that is implements the governor's budget recommendation around fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. There is a base appropriation in session law for $1.1 million, and we are repealing that appropriation and including it in the appropriation in the rider in the appropriation section for $2 million, which reflects our base appropriation and the governor's recommended increase of $900,000.
Thank you.
Any other questions to the amendment? Okay. Move in that amendment, Senator. Sorry, Representative Eastland.
So who's offering the amendment? Or where's it coming from?
I believe Representative Clark is offering this amendment to her bill, 2241.
Mr. Chair, could I...
Representative Eastland.
So where did the amendment come from?
It comes from the governor, Representative Eastland. This is his recommendation. It was, I think, inadvertently left out of the bill, and we just heard from Mr. Kelly that said that's the case.
Yeah, okay. All right, thanks.
Okay. To the A1 amendment, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. And the bill is then, any other discussion to the bill? Okay, then we will lay this over for inclusion into the omnibus bill. And members, we do finally have a quorum, so I need somebody to move the minutes. Representative McNamara, you're smiling. You must have read them. Care to make that motion?
Yeah, maybe an editorial comment just before I make the motion. Representative Clark, would you want me to move the 2241 for adoption? Or no.
Mr. Chairman, after we mark it up, you have plenty of chance to do that.
Great answer, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, I would move the minutes for adoption.
Wonderful. Those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. Then, with nothing else on the agenda,
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Clark.
Can I just speak for a moment? We will be marking up the bill on Friday morning, and I wanted to let my Republican colleagues know that we expect to have this in your hands, the bill that we are putting together, proposing to amend this bill that we just considered, hopefully by later this tonight. And we would ask, that's if everything works well, otherwise at the very latest tomorrow morning, but we hope to have it in your hands tonight. And what we'd ask then is that amendments be prepared and to us no later than by 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon so that we'll have a chance to look at it. And that goes for all amendments. Something very tiny, I suppose, could be considered. But basically, we want to have our amendments ahead of time. So I'm asking you to try to observe that, if you would, please.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Clark, then we'll... Will we take the bill up Thursday night? I think we have a couple different additional meeting schedules. So will we just start to discuss the bill Thursday night and take amendments then? Or are we going to do that on, and are we going to actually, your thoughts, that we won't move the bill till Friday?
Yeah, Representative Clark, maybe you could give us all kind of a timeline of the next two days here.
Let's double check with my staff here, but the bill will be available to you tonight. Thursday we will have an opportunity, we'll just present it briefly. We have about an hour, I think, before session to just go through it so that you all have it, understanding basically, and the public will hear what it is.
That's Thursday at 8 a.m.?
Yes, Thursday at 8 a.m. we go to session. That evening, or that afternoon, we will have a chance for the public to weigh in on it. We'll have public testimony on the bill. We won't be marking it up or doing any amendments until Friday. And Friday morning we meet at 8 a.m., and that's when we'll do any amendments and... hopefully pass the bill out in a short period of time, or however long it takes us, we'll be meeting to go through the bill.
Okay, so just for the record, and members trying to keep this all straight, tomorrow morning 8:30, we'll be presenting the bill, and that the basement hearing room. Then tomorrow at 4 o'clock, we will take public testimony in the basement also, and then Friday morning at 8 a.m. we will be right here for the market of the bill. Any other questions? Representative Clark, any final words?
Nope, just all. Thank you for moving through today. I think we did a good job.
We are adjourned.